U.S. President Joe Biden meets with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky.
You are the bulwark against the aggression that's taking place. We have an obligation to be there.
Israel's Benjamin Netanyahu is set to address the U.S. Congress next month.
Leaders from both parties signed a letter extending the invitation to Netanyahu, but its appearance is sure to be contentious and met with plenty of protest.
Why China is recruiting Western pilots
is to get these individuals to share their knowledge, their know-how, their understanding of Western air warfare.
And a look at what can be done to counter social media disinformation campaigns ahead of elections around the world. Today is Friday, June 7th, and this is VOA's Flashpoint, Global Crises. Hello, everyone. I'm Steve Miller in for Steve Karish. U.S. President Joe Biden has, for the first time, publicly apologized to Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky for a months-long holdup in American military assistance that let Russia make battlefield gains.
The United States is standing with you. You are the bulwark against the aggression that's taking place. We have an obligation to be there. So I'm looking forward to having a detailed discussion with you about where we go from here. But we're still in completely, thoroughly. Thank you.
Biden and Zelensky met Friday in France, where they attended ceremonies marking the 80th anniversary of the D-Day landings. Dressed in his familiar green combat fatigues, Zelensky pressed for all Americans to support his country's defense against Russia's full-scale invasion, as well as he thanked lawmakers for eventually coming together to approve the weapons package, which has allowed Ukraine to stem Russian advances in recent weeks.
And our meeting here is very symbolic. It's very important that you stay with us. This bipartisan support with the Congress, it's very important that in this unity, United States, America, all American people stay with Ukraine. Like it was during World War II, how United States helped to save human lives, to save Europe, and we count on your continuing support and staying with us.
The bilateral meeting came after Zelensky gave a 20-minute or so address to France's lower house and its National Assembly. And joining us now from Kyiv with more details is Anna Chernikova. Anna, so let's pick things up in France, where, you know, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky has met with U.S. President Joe Biden. The announcement of $225 million and more aid for Ukraine. He met with France's defense minister, addressed the lower house. What can you tell us more about what's coming out from this overseas trip?
So President Zelensky, it's his second day in France, and he had quite a productive day today, meeting with President Biden and President Macron. Probably the meeting with President Biden was the most awaited here in Ukraine, because everyone expected the new package to be announced during the meeting. And as we have, as a result, quite an impressive package, new one, $225 million, which will provide additional air defense missiles, as well as Stinger and Javelin systems, and much more. So definitely Ukrainians are very happy about this. Inside of the country, there is understanding that, of course, Ukraine needs more and as fast as possible. But such announcement, such big package, is definitely a positive news. Also, what we're hearing that after President Zelensky, together with the Minister of Defense of France, visited one of the manufacturers' factories in France, it was announced that KNDS manufacturer, which produces the Caesar self-propelled howitzer. They are thinking about and getting ready to come to the Ukrainian market and to produce and to create a subsidiary in Ukraine and produce a certain of some of their products in Ukraine.
You know, one of the things that really struck me as I was watching the bilateral meeting between Zelensky and Biden was this moment when Zelensky said, you know, I have updates from the front lines, but it's not for the press. It's for you. And we'll discuss that, you know, behind closed doors, so to speak. What can you tell us?
The situation is really tough along the whole front line. So we're talking about, of course, the south of the country, the east part of the country, the north, because as we can see, Russian forces are trying to advance not just in the Kharkiv region, but also, again, the intensifying of attacks in the Donetsk region. There are a lot of fears and talks around the fact that Russian forces might also be trying to create so-called buffer zone, which is seen at this point in the Kharkiv region, also in the Sumy and in the Chernihiv region. You know, a number of experts believe that this would look logical, and this is what President Putin also announced, that he is looking for a buffer and gray zone on the territory of Ukraine. So battles are really difficult and really intense. In terms of the attacks, the missile and drone attacks continue every day, and also when we analyze, we see that Russian forces mainly are targeting critical infrastructure, particularly energy infrastructure, and the situation in the energy sector of Ukraine is really, really bad. It's really close to critical, according to Ukrainian energy officials. And just in the early hours of June 7th, alone, Russian forces attacked Ukraine with 5 missiles and 53 drones. And most of them, again, were targeting the critical infrastructure facilities.
As always, Anna, we thank you for your reporting. Please continue to stay safe. Anna Chertakova reports for VOA from Kyiv, Ukraine. Anna, thank you.
Thank you, Steve.
And we'll, of course, have a complete wrap of the day's events on our website. But let's turn our attention back to the war in Ukraine, which has left much of the population traumatized in some way. Children, especially, can have a rough time. That's why U.S. pediatrician and activist Erwin Redliner founded Ukraine Children's Action Project, which is designed to get Ukrainian children access to health care. Irina Solomenko has the story, narrated by Anna Rice.
U.S. pediatrician Erwin Redliner and his wife Karen have dedicated their lives to helping children who are either traumatized or going through a crisis.
This is our life. And I've worked with, like I said, with children in disasters and children who live in extreme poverty here, refugee children in different places.
The idea to help Ukrainian children came to him after his friend, singer and activist Joan Baez, made a portrait of Ukraine's president, Volodymyr Zelensky.
So in 24 hours, she sold 250 prints at $500-something a piece. She said, okay, now I have $150,000. Who do I give it to help Ukraine? I said, Joan, I have no idea, really, but I'll find out.
In May 2022, the couple visited Poland, then Lviv and Ukraine, to figure out on the spot what would be the best use for the funds raised by Baez. It was at Lviv Hospital, when Redliner first saw child victims of Russia's aggression, that he realized what he needed to do.
One child, a 10-year-old girl, had a severe head injury. She had a plate in her head. She had witnessed both of her parents executed with a pistol by Russian soldiers, both of them. And, you know, it was overwhelming, even for me as very experienced in this area.
After that visit, Redliner founded the nonprofit Ukraine Children's Action Project in May of 2022. By May of this year, the Redliners have raised over $4,800,000 for the cause. With this money, they were able to support over 30 various programs through their partners in Ukraine and help more than 40,000 children.
We help children in the educational process, including things like my wife developed a program to train teachers, it's in Ukrainian, how to manage children with psychological trauma that are in their classrooms. Because teachers here or there really don't know. They don't get training in what to do with severely traumatized children in the classroom.
The Redliners have also organized camps for displaced families, where children's psychological issues became more seen. Redliner estimates about 1 million Ukrainian children today have psychological trauma of varying degrees of graveness.
We see eight-year-olds who have never been in a normal classroom. You know, if you can't read at grade level when you're eight or nine, this affects the rest of your education.
Redliner says he is driven by the idea that someday the war in Ukraine will end and the country will need its children to be educated, psychologically prepared, and secure enough to be able to rebuild Ukraine. For Irina Salomka in New York, NRI's VOA News.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is expected to address a joint meeting of the U.S. Congress on July 24th. We get the details now from Associated Press correspondent Norman Hall.
Congressional leaders last week formally invited Netanyahu to come to speak as a show of support of Israel, despite mounting political divisions over the military assault on Hamas in Gaza. Leaders from both parties signed a letter extending the invitation to Netanyahu, but his appearance is sure to be contentious and met with plenty of protests both inside the Capitol from lawmakers and outside by pro-Palestinian protesters. Norman Hall, Washington.
Meanwhile, in Gaza, health officials say overnight Israeli airstrikes killed at least 18 people, including children. It comes a day after 33 were killed at a United Nations-run school sheltering displaced Palestinian families. Israel's army said on Friday that it was also continuing operations in parts of central Gaza. It said its troops had killed dozens of militants, located tunnel shafts, and destroyed infrastructure in the area. This is VOA News. You're listening to Flashpoint Global Crises from the Voice of America. I'm Steve Miller. China's military appears to be intensifying its efforts to recruit current and former Western fighter pilots. A new warning says Beijing is employing new and more intricate tactics to snare Western expertise. VOA national security correspondent Jeff Selden joins us with the details. So, Jeff, concern about China recruiting pilots from the West is nothing new, according to some of the reporting out there. But what about this latest warning is new?
Well, as we've reported at VOA, the concerns about China looking to recruit fighter pilots, other people involved in air warfare from Western countries, including the United States, goes back several years now. And in fact, there have been the U.S. and its partners and allies have taken some actions to try to limit this. But the coalition known as Five Eyes, it's an intelligence partnership between the U.S., Canada, Britain, Australia, and New Zealand, this week put out a new bulletin, a new warning, if you will, saying that despite the pushback from Western nations, NATO allies, others, to prevent their pilots from being recruited to train Chinese pilots, China's upped the game. They've gotten sneakier. They've gotten more clever. They're using more companies and entities to hide these job offers, doing more targeted recruitment of potential pilots for training, using headhunting organizations, using personal pitches from people they may know. And oftentimes, the offers really obfuscate. They hide the link to China and the People's Liberation Army. And so because of that, the U.S. and its allies have put out a new warning trying to get pilots, current pilots, fighter pilots, former retired military pilots to pay more attention and be more suspicious of offers. Because a lot of times these job offers are coming with lucrative salaries. They look very attractive. And it's not until a little bit later that these pilots will realize that they're actually working for the Chinese government.
So Jeff, what kind of job offers are being talked about here?
The intelligence agencies haven't gotten very specific about what the offers are. But obviously, they're related to aviation. And it's pitched as some, you know, these are offers that are pitched as something that would be perfect, a good fit for a former fighter pilot, a former military pilot, or other individuals who work in air warfare because they're with aviation companies, they're training, good salaries are often attached. And so it's something that would be attractive, appear as good jobs for pilots to transition into as they leave military service and go into private sector. The problem is that the goal of these offers that are always linked back to China is to get these individuals to share their knowledge, their know-how, their understanding of Western air warfare, tactics, techniques, and procedures so that they can train Chinese pilots. Look, Western officials, the U.S. in particular, have been very vocal about how China has been modernizing and expanding rapidly their military. We often hear about the expansion of China's Navy, but China is also trying to advance and modernize its Air Force. And while in some cases the technology looks good, there are concerns, and the Chinese seem to be concerned that while they have the technology, their understanding of the tactics, the way to best use that technology in the case of a conflict, isn't where they want to be. And the U.S. says, look, the Chinese will often steal the technology through industrial espionage. Right now, they're looking to get the expertise to go along with the technology so they can erode the qualitative advantage that the U.S. and its allies currently have.
And Jeff, one last question. Has China responded to this latest warning by the Five Eyes, or really, have they responded, or how have they responded to previous warnings by the intelligence communities?
VOA, we reached out to Chinese officials at the embassy in Washington, and they declined to comment specifically on the allegations about that China is seeking out former Western military fighter pilots to train their air forces. There are a number of court cases that have been in the news over the past couple of years, but the Chinese officials just refused to comment on that. Instead, their response pushed back against the allegations from the U.S. and its other Five Eyes partners about China's use of other companies to kind of hide and obfuscate what the point of these job offers are. In China, basically, in the Chinese embassy, in an email to VOA, said that, you know, it's wrong for the U.S. to smear these other companies, some of which have direct ties to China, others which are operating in other countries. This isn't just job offers where the pilots are being recruited to come to China. In some cases, it's in Africa. South Africa is one of the areas where recruitment has been heavy. But China said it's wrong to smear these companies, that they're doing things that are normal and good for companies to do, and that basically that the U.S. efforts are going to harm in the long run U.S.-China relations in a way that is not helpful.
Jeff Seldon is VOA's national security correspondent. Jeff, as always, we thank you.
My pleasure.
And turning to another kind of recruitment, cyber experts warn the U.S. and other countries holding elections this year have failed to set up guardrails to counter Russian disinformation campaigns using vastly improved artificial intelligence, or AI. VOA's Carol Van Dam looks at what Congress, the AI companies, and ordinary people can do to try to reduce the amount of disinformation circulating in social media this election year.
Recent analysis from Microsoft's Threat Analysis Center said Russia remains the most committed and capable threat to the 2024 U.S. presidential election, with new forms of influence and interference efforts, including AI. Brett Schaefer, senior fellow and head of the Alliance for Securing Democracy's Information Manipulation Team, says lawmakers have known about Russian interference in U.S. elections for years.
We always are playing catch up in terms of our defenses. But in this case, we really shouldn't be, because for at least the past 6 to 8 years, we've been waiting for deepfakes to come. We've been waiting for AI to really have a more prominent role in propaganda campaigns. But unfortunately, the sort of AI revolution has coincided with trust and safety teams at the tech companies being slashed or eliminated.
Schaefer tells VOA that means the ability of social media sites to monitor their platforms to identify disinformation is difficult because those workers have largely disappeared over the last few years. At X, formerly Twitter, management rolled back trust and safety operations, he says.
In fairness, X has said that they will sort of aggressively pursue misuses of AI, but if you don't have the people there, it's going to be pretty hard to detect all of this nefarious activity happening on the platform.
So what can people do to tell the difference between real and fake posts? The short answer is, right now, not much. Imran Ahmed is head of the Center for Countering Digital Hate.
if the professionals in my research team often can't tell the difference between real and fake, I don't know how the average person, when scrolling through their social media feed, would be able to tell what's real or fake. The truth is that we need to have a industry-wide solution, whether that is watermarking these images, these audio with a tracking pixel, with metadata, with other creative solutions that then, when it appears on a social media platform, they flag because they can see that metadata, they can see that tracking pixel, that it is actually inauthentic. That would be a solution, but you need industry-wide agreement on it.
And that won't happen, Ahmed tells VOA, because AI companies will not want to change the quality of what they produce. Can websites keep track of fake posts coming from Russia? Again, Brett Schaefer.
We should be teaching kids and adults about the sort of digital ecosystem, making them more media literate. But that is not going to sort of solve all of our issues. So individual users, in the same way that we instruct them how to protect themselves from scams online, from people trying to extract money from them, from, you know, Nigerian princes to all of these other sort of known scams online, sort of cybersecurity principles. We need to drill that into people.
Schaefer and others say the U.S. government can pass laws to reduce online disinformation. The European Union has enacted stiff penalties for social media companies that do not remove such posts, but that was years in the making. Critics of such legislation have cited U.S. freedom of speech rights, but Schaefer says members of Congress also are unlikely to push back against U.S. companies. He says company executives argue that if Congress regulates them, all it will do is improve the business standing of Chinese tech companies. Avril Haines, the U.S. Director of National Intelligence, told senators at a briefing last month on election risks that Russia remains the most active foreign threat to our elections. Russian officials have denied allegations that Moscow seeks to interfere in U.S. elections. Carol Van Dam for VOA News, Washington.
And finally, in the HBO series The Last of Us, a fungus invading human hosts turned people into zombie-like creatures. It's a plot device that turned the video game in which the TV series was based upon into a worldwide phenomenon. New Cicada research points to how this is happening to a certain extent in emerging 13 and 17-year-old broods. While the fungus can't leap to humans, Reuters' Gabe Singer has the details on how it affects the insects.
A mind-controlling fungus is turning cicadas across Illinois into diseased sex machines. The so-called zombie fungus, called Massapora cicadina, targets 13 and 17-year periodical cicadas, supercharging their sex drive. Jim Louderman, a collections assistant at Chicago's Field Museum, explains that this is how the fungus spreads its spores.
They become hypersexual, and they just want to mate with any cicada they can find, which is how it is passed on. When they try to mate, they pass the spores on to other cicadas. So it is basically an STD.
The white fungus has already infected cicadas across the central and southern parts of Illinois and is beginning to pop up in the Chicago area. Louderman explains why that doesn't mean more cicada babies.
Only about 10% or less of the cicadas are going to get it. And it fruits, making spores, and it knocks the back three segments of the abdomen off and replaces them with a spore packet, which is just kind of fuzzy ball of spores that are hanging on to the back of the insect. And when the back of the insect falls off, it takes the genitalia with it, so the cicadas cannot mate.
Research scientist Matt Nielsen says there's also another way the zombie fungus can be transmitted.
We end up seeing this kind of plug attached to the back end of these cicadas, and what it ultimately is it's a mass of spores. And so as these cicadas are flying around, they're raining down spores on other cicadas. And so they've earned this nickname, the Flying Salt Shakers of Death, which is kind of a catchy name, in my opinion.
It may all sound like the setup for zombie apocalypse fiction, but Louderman says humans are safe. This fungus cannot transfer to anything but periodical cicadas.
That's Gabe Singer from Reuters News. Well, that's all the time we have today and this week. There's more updates on news and world events 24 hours a day at our website. And as always, we thank you for spending part of your day with us. Until next time, I'm Steve Miller. For deeper dives and expert analysis, listen to VOA Podcasts. Issues in the News explores the biggest stories every weekend, while International Edition keeps you informed every weekday. Plus, with a 5-minute newscast at the top of every hour, you're always up to date.